Ron, I want to thank you so much for having this conversation and for having such a long conversation with me on the experiences in your life. It really means a lot to me.
Thank you. I appreciate you allowing me to speak to tell my story.
Well,
And
it's been very obvious that it wouldn't have served you or the listeners or the greater mystery, I guess, if we had not really just committed to allowing the story to be told thoughtfully. That happens a lot where people, I can tell there's more to their story. Sometimes they'll do an interview and you have an hour and you can get a lot out in an hour, but I can tell that some people have more to tell about that story. And that's actually what I'm interested in, is the not only, the one or two powerful stories or five or six powerful stories, but all the odd little things that go on in between those accounts and
Yeah,
are
there's
connected.
so much more than just the story itself. Dreams play a part of it. Experiences other than UFOs plays a part of it too.
And then
There's just so much.
the synchronicities for me have played a part in these weird coincidences. Hey, as we ended the show last week, you spoke about, this was a dream experience, but you spoke about meeting Jesus, and that generated some buzz in the comments on the show page. And I just wanted to follow up on that because you didn't really say much. You just some of your memories and details of that dream.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was a real vivid dream. And it started out, well, I told you before some of my dreams, I would be an animal, a bear, a fox, a
Oh, yeah.
deer, or whatever. Okay, in this dream, I was a deer. And I'm standing on the edge of this town, and there's people walking towards me from this town. So I turn and I run away. I don't want them catching me. And I run, and I'm telling myself that I'm in my master's world. Everything in this world is, it's scary. It's I love my master, but yet I'm afraid of him. And I'm telling this as a deer. It might be hard to visualize, but anyways, I run off and I'm running through fields, I'm jumping fences, just running, looking behind me, and I'm telling myself, well, my master is not chasing me any longer. And when I'm saying my master, I'm talking about man. And I run and run and run, and then I just get so darn tired, I run up to this big rock. It's like a wall, it's a huge boulder, and I just lay down. And I'm laying there just trying to catch my breath. And then, after a while, there's a being appears out of this rock. And he tells me that you won't have to put up with this anymore. And what he means by that is, I'm not exactly sure, but I get up and he asked me to follow him, so I follow him and we go walk into this rock. And there's people, they're light beings, and they're all over. There's young ones, little ones, big ones.
Wait, so you said you went into the rock?
Into the rock, in through the rock,
Okay.
yeah. And the being that took me, he's telling me, he says that you won't ever have to fear for your life ever again. And so I'm standing there, and he tells me that there's somebody that wants to see you, and he kind of glides off, and everybody else kind of moves away from me. And this, it's not a pillar of light, it's a spot of light, real bright, appears in front of me. And it's got rays shooting out in all directions, and it slowly moves towards me. And I can see the image of a man in this white light. And he's not on the ground. He's about a foot off the ground, and he just kind of glides up to me. And it's so bright, but yet I can see him plain as day. It's not overpowering or anything. And he comes up to me, and the first thing he asks, he says, "Do you know me?" And I tell him, and we're talking telepathically, and I go, "Yes, I know who you are." And he puts his hands on top of my head, between my ears. Mm-hmm. And after a while, he starts telling me that I won't have to worry about man anymore, that this will be my last incarnation on Earth, and I can come back if I want to, but it'll be my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it, and this just goes on, and then finally he tells me that if I want to, I can live in this realm with these light beings. And that was it. He goes back into a bright light and just descends away from me. And that was it. I woke up after that.
Now, did he call you? Or excuse me. And did he, like, introduce himself as Jesus, or how did you know it was Jesus?
No, I knew. When he asked me, "Do you know who I am?" And I go, "Yes, I know you." It was like I didn't want to say his name because, you know, in the dream state or these astral projections, there's all kinds of bad spirits out there. And I just didn't want to say who he was.
Okay.
In case they're, you know, I didn't want to throw my pearls before swine.
Okay. Okay. And did you have any image? I mean, were you seeing a bearded man with a...
No, it wasn't. Okay, you know the generic pictures that you see of Jesus?
Sure, yeah.
In churches and stuff. He didn't look anything like that. He looked like a normal person. This person didn't have a beard. But he was in a white, golden white light.
Mm-hmm.
Wore a robe all the way from the neck down almost to his feet. He was barefoot, didn't have any sandals or nothing on. Like I say, he wasn't walking. He was just gliding, like about a foot off the ground.
Okay. I just looked it up, and I kind of knew this anyway. I would have written down the same thing, but while you were talking, I looked it up. The spirit meaning of the deer. The deer is a symbol of the wilderness and the forest, and it's also a symbol of peace and gentleness and kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also symbolic of fear. And you said that as you were approaching the rock. You said this is the realm of fear you were in.
And you right.
Were, yeah.
Yeah, it was. I was being hunted. These people that were following me, they were chasing me.
Okay.
They were going to kill me.
And then, now... Is there a sense or a understanding that this is somehow, this dream was somehow tied into your contact experiences?
Gosh, this is really tough to talk about. These beings that when I went into the rock, the one had come out and got me and took me in. They were, I was invited in, and I went with them. And these were interdimensional beings. I guess you could call them aliens. I would call them more interdimensional. And
what did they look like?
They looked like a regular person. They looked like us. They was real smooth, like soft complected. They were almost transparent. You could almost see through them, and the light shined from them from within. I had another experience with beings like this in my house when I told you about the big owl outside in the driveway.
Yep.
There was another night that I woke up, and something told me to go into the living room. So I got out of bed, went into the living room, and these three beings appeared. And they were gold colored. They were almost transparent, but they were all females. I could sense this. They were probably about 7.5 foot tall, something like that. They were standing in my living room. I got 8 foot tall ceilings, so I'm guessing they're about 7.5 foot tall, and they were all enveloped in a light, a gold-colored light, just like the beings in the dream I had. And these beings told me that they were called Centauris. They were from Centauri.
Okay.
And that they come to Earth to marry humans to help them ascend. And what I mean by marry, I'm not talking about man and wife. I'm talking about souls combining. And that's their purpose. And after a while, they disappeared. And then I went back to bed. But these beings were like that, or almost identical. There was nothing rough about them. They had no hair. They were bald headed, as in both. It looked like they were wearing robes, but like I say, you could see through them, and there was a light that emitted from inside of them, and they were very beautiful, and the feeling of love was just, it would almost knock me out, and that just like in the dream with Jesus and those light beings. The feeling of love was just so overwhelming. It was almost unbearable.
Yeah, and that shows up obviously in the UFO contact literature as well as in the near-death experience literature. And I've heard some people actually say they were angry because they felt they were being manipulated when they've been confronted by this, I guess angry afterward. I don't think they were in the moment, that they felt like they were being manipulated somehow, that this love sensation was like presented to them, or they were influenced by an outside source to feel exactly that. And
I have never felt that. I felt love, but I never felt like I was manipulated. I almost feel, to me, it felt more like a gift, like a like they were giving me something that I needed to help ascend me
mm-hmm.
off this planet.
Yeah. Wow.
I still think this planet and our life here, I think along the same lines as Dolores Cannon. I think this is a school, it's a preparation area or realm before you actually ascend.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh, I hope I'm saying this right.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, every tradition would have different vocabulary words,
right.
I'm certain, but yeah. I've read a lot of Dolores Cannon. I'm very familiar with her work. So, and the lessons here to learn. Yes, I mean, so this, we're placed here in this extremely challenging physical realm with pain and grief and sorrow, and at the same time, there's beautiful things like, I mean,
mm-hmm.
the power of a gorgeous sunset or the power of a close friendship. These are remarkable things that
yeah.
transcend those darker moments, for sure.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, everything is related. Everything is relative to one another in this, oh, I don't know what word I'm looking for.
Like here.
In these experiences.
Okay.
Because I have the experiences with LB and the other entities, and they really don't say where they're from. And I just always used to assume they was alien, but I'm actually believing now they're more interdimensional than alien.
Like alien meaning from another planet. They're...
Yeah, when I say alien, I'm talking about like from Alpha Centauri or someplace
yeah.
like that. Interdimensional, they're right here, but just on another vibrational plane.
Mm-hmm.
And but they have, these entities have guided me into another dimension through an OBE, out-of-body experience. The same entities that abducted me, they even guided me to, through an OBE, to the afterlife where I met my mom.
Yeah, we talked about that. Was at the summation of the last episode? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's all related.
Hey, I need to interrupt this conversation, but we need to take our very first break. For free listeners, you will be hearing a few commercials. And for paying members, we will be right back.
Unknown Country and Dreamland are unique in every way. The site offers over 16,000 news stories dating back 20 years, all of them with our uniquely open-minded and yet carefully researched point of view. You can find stories of everything from lost cities to multiple witness high strangeness events to the cutting edge of science and reality on the site. For subscribers, the site offers a wealth of material that is mind-opening and can be life-changing. Plus, there are active comment sections, both in the free area and the subscriber area, and a free weekly newsletter. Dreamland, which Whitley Strieber has been hosting for over 20 years, is archived on the site back to 2004. This archive is the only one of its kind in the world, an incredible richness of information that offers exciting adventure every time you dig in. So go to unknowncountry.com daily, get our newsletter, participate in the site's social groups, and above all, subscribe and join this unique community today. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the Subscribe tab to see our options.
We are back on The Unseen, and I am talking with my friend Ron Johnson, and I am going to bring us right back into the conversation just at the point where we left off only moments ago. Okay, here we go, coming right back in.
And in this other realm that they took me to, it was one of the lower planes between this life and the afterlife. and it was just a solid gray void. That's all it was. There was no up, no down. There was no floor, no walls, nothing. It was just like in a thick gray fog.
And you said it was down. Do you feel it was underground or below, or it was as opposed to being up?
No, no. When I say down, there was no solid surface that you could see. But yet, it felt like you were standing there. But actually, I couldn't have been standing there, because I was in a I wasn't in a body. I was in a I was more like consciousness, void of a body. And oh boy. And it just and I met the same entities that have taken me between 2008 and 2010. Were there, and they were showing me a device that, I think I've talked about this before. It was a device that they used to dimension hop, to transverse the different dimensions.
Not the craft itself you talked about.
No, no, this isn't the craft. This is a device that they showed me. And what it was a disc about maybe 10 feet in diameter. And it was sitting on a pedestal, and it had a beam of light about a foot in diameter, 8 inches to a foot in diameter, somewhere along in there. And it just looked like it went up out of this device, and it just looked like it just went forever. It went up into the gray, and it just got dimmer and dimmer, and then you couldn't see it anymore.
Wow. Okay. No, you hadn't talked about that before. So.
Oh, I have. Okay. I thought I did.
Yeah, you talked about the craft, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And they told me this is how they travel the vast distances of the universe. That they cannot go from point A to point B. It would take too long. They have to transverse the dimensions to get there in such a short amount of time.
So these experiences all took place, I guess, leading up to now. And what's been going on presently for you?
After the encounter where I flew the ship and they told me what my purpose was, where I had to... Well, I didn't have to, but where I was going to transport chosen humans to another dimensional Earth. From that point, I started having dreams. This is when the animal dreams really started manifesting for me. wolf in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have these dreams with a wolf. And he would always be in my face. And this went on. And then in the one dream, I actually asked him who he was. And he told me that it was Elby.
Mm-hmm.
That he would come to me as an animal, most likely a wolf, but sometimes a deer or whatever. And this is how he would contact me in the future. Because he said the sight of me is you're having a difficult time with how I actually look.
Mm-hmm.
And he says this will be much easier for you to see me as a deer or a wolf or whatever. And so I've been having these dreams with him, and I've been having these dreams of being different animals and stuff, and
yeah.
They're fascinating. I love them.
You know, it's interesting. This sounds like like if you were a shaman, right, living in the jungles of Peru or like in a teepee out in South Dakota 300 years ago or even now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the kinds of things that would be normal for the village shaman, to have dreams of being an animal or to have these visionary experiences.
Right.
And to be taken to other realms too. And then also, I've been reading a lot about shamanism lately. And one of the things that's often talked about is this underworld, this cave experience. And that's why I asked about that when you said the gray realm, like if that was underground, because that's a very common motif within the shamanic journey.
I have, when I talk about down in this other dimension, I'm referring to the ground, mm-hmm. that there's no down, there's no ground to stand on that mm-hmm. you can see. It's just gray in all directions.
Okay.
But I've never had any experiences being underground.
Except with when you went to visit the Bigfoot, you went to a cave.
Yeah, went that time. And there was one other time. There's a friend of mine that lives up in northern Utah, and she does, I call it astral traveling, but she doesn't call it that. She calls it mind travel. And we did a big group session at her house, and we wanted to go see the underground civilization, if there was one. And we all started to meditate. We all closed our eyes and was trying to get into this altered state. And all of a sudden, I find myself in this, it looks like a big, huge cavern. And there's what looks like stone buildings, kind of looks like Indian stone dwellings.
Mm-hmm.
And these are underground. There's ladders going up to different windows and doors. But I'm the only one there. There's no other people there. It's almost like it's abandoned. And I'm walking around. I'm trying to find the other people in this group session, and I can't find anybody. And so after walking around a while, I just bring myself out of it and wake up, and I'm waiting for everybody else in this group session to wake up. And they were telling me what they saw, and there was only three of us out of like seven that actually went to this place, and the others just couldn't do it, the other four.
So all the people had a shared visionary experience. You all had the same experience.
Right, yeah, we all had a shared. Mm-hmm.
And what was in the realm? There was...
The other two that succeeded in going there, they met up with each other, but I couldn't find them. And they described the same exact place that I was at. But it was pretty fascinating. And I didn't think anybody could share the same vision, but apparently I guess it works. I guess it's possible.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. And any other UFO-type sightings recently?
Yes. Oh, gosh, UFO sightings galore.
Recently?
Back when I started having these encounters with in 2008, I started seeing this big, it's like a big giant sphere, translucent sphere that shines from within. It reminds me of a big giant light bulb. And I started seeing this thing all the time. One time, I would see it at my house, at my other house, when I used to live in Price. I would go out. One time I went over to Manti to visit a friend of mine. And on the way back, I come up Fairview Canyon and up over the top of Huntington Canyon. And as I'm driving along down by Electric Lake Dam, I notice off to the left of me, there's a big white light And this light is in the shape of a circle or a sphere, and it's pacing me. It's not going any faster or any slower than me. It's going same speed, and it's just slowly moving along, and it goes behind the mountain. Then it comes back out the other side, and it's going along near the top of the mountains. And so I pulled off at the dam, and I'm watching this, and it stops. And so I said, you know, I could probably see this better if I go back up to the top. So I turned the truck around, and I took off back up to the top, to the summit. And when I got up there, I couldn't find it. And other times at my house, when I was living in Price, I had a premonition to go out onto the back porch. And so I did. I went out there, and there was this big translucent white UFO. It's just slowly moving towards my house from the east, going west. And as soon as it gets overhead, two little ones come off of it, and then they shoot out and disappear. And then the big one just keeps going west until it disappears over the mountain. Well, that same night, I had an abduction with Elvie, the entity.
Mm-hmm. Is that one we've talked about?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, that's one of the experiences okay. we talked about, but I didn't mention the UFO.
That's very common that people will see one earlier in the day or hours before, yeah. and then have a contact experience at night. It's kind of like, I don't know how to say it, it's like a little heads up, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost like a the welcome mat being yeah. set out for you. And other nights, another time, I went out on the back porch, and there was another one coming from the east, coming towards the house. And it gets real close to my property, and then it just makes a sharp 90-degree turn and goes straight down and disappears behind some houses.
This is Mike, and I need to interrupt our conversation for our second and final break. For free listeners, you will be hearing a few commercials. And for paying members, we will be right back.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world.
At this point in this commercial, I used to say that you can't subscribe because we are still in our old website, but that has changed at last. UnknownCountry.com's new website is available. Go to UnknownCountry.com and take a look. It is beautiful. It offers a huge archive, weekly chats, a free message board, all kinds of great stuff. Whitley Strieber audiobooks for subscribers, and much, much more. New stuff coming on the site all the time. So go to unknowncountry.com, take a look, and really open your mind. How do you do that? By subscribing and exploring and having a great time.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. He's been doing this for the past 30 years, and since 2015, the intensity of it has exploded. So be among the first to know what living with them is really like and what it will be like for more and more of us in the future. A new world, unforgettable.
It's getting great reviews. Take a look on Amazon. It's available as a Kindle, as an ebook everywhere else, and as a paperback at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon, and as also as a hardcover on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and as an audiobook read by me on Audible.com.
We are back on The Unseen, and I am talking with my good friend Ron Johnson. And before the break, we interrupted the conversation, and we are going to slide right back into it right now.
Here goes.
And another time, when I moved up here to East Carbon, my neighbor would come over, and he had experiences like mine.
Now, is he still living there, your neighbor?
No, he died. He died right after I moved here.
Okay. Because I remember you talking about this when I was there back in 2000 and probably 2011 or so, 11 or 12.
Yeah. And so, anyways, we would sit out on the front porch and talk. You know, he'd ask me questions. Because like I said, he was having experiences like mine. And he told me that I scared the hell out of him since I moved in here. And, but anyways, I'll get into that a little later.
Okay.
But we're sitting on the porch one night, and this big sphere, UFO, coming towards us from the, it'd be like from the northeast, and it comes right directly over us, and then it stops, and the thing starts to pulsate. And then it's like it gets real, real, real bright, and then it just goes out.
And what did it look like? Was it a?
It was the same UFO.
Okay.
It was like a white, translucent white sphere.
Okay, gotcha.
And another time, we're sitting out on the porch, and I, over, just outside of town, there's an old abandoned railroad depot, and about where that was, it was about a mile from where the house is, and I was watching this big sphere. It was this same UFO slowly ascending up into the cloud, and it goes into the cloud, but it never comes out, and I never saw it anymore after that. But another time in Price in 2010, when I was living in Price, I had a premonition. This was right after my mom died, to grab my camera and get outside. And I mean, it was like somebody screaming this in my mind. So I grabbed my camera and I went outside, and I saw this sphere, same UFO, moving along the sky, and it's moving pretty quick. So I got my camera and I hurried up, turned it on, and I just barely had enough time to poke it up into the air, and I just took a picture. I didn't even look through the viewfinder. I just stuck it up there and took a picture. And luckily I got it. I got a real good one and a telephone pole in with it.
Oh, I would love to see that.
Oh, I'll send it to you.
Great.
And it was weird. It was like an invitation is what it felt like. And another time I had I got a job when I was living in Price for one of the car dealers, and I would drive cars to and back from the Salt Lake Auto Auction. And so this one trip, I picked up my car at the auction, and I came back, and I started up Spanish Fork Canyon. You know where that is, don't you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. It's right out of Spanish Fork, heading towards Price on Highway 6 and 50. But anyways, I'm heading up. I'm driving along about 70 miles an hour, you know, and I get to Billy's Mountain. And on the other side of Billy's Mountain, I notice there's something flying above the mountaintops. I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, you know, airplane. I just kept on driving. Didn't think about it. So I got up the road about another 5 miles or so, and then I just glanced off to the left of me, and I saw it again. And I started looking at it, and I said, huh, that's not an airplane. What the hell is that? So I'm driving along now, instead of focusing on my driving, I'm watching this thing chase me on the from the mountaintops to my left. And boy, I had to really be careful because I mean, I was driving off the, onto the shoulder and doing all kinds of bad things. And so I get going up the canyon towards Soldier Summit, and this thing is still off to the left of me. It's not going any faster, and it's not going any slower. It's pacing me. And I'm watching this thing, and I'm looking at it, and it's a rectangular box. It's white in color. And it's got a big black dot on the one side, a big black circle.
So just a rectangular box. There's no wings. There's
just
no
okay. No wings. Nothing. Just a rectangular box. I don't remember seeing any windows in it or anything. There could have been, but I was just looking at the general shape. I couldn't look at it very long because I was driving along about 70 miles an hour. I didn't want to kill myself. So as I go up towards coming into Soldier Summit, I drove through the little town and started down the other side, and it's still over there at the top of the mountains, just slowly moving along, following me, pacing me. And I said, I'm going to stop off at Schofield Junction. And I'm going to grab my camera. I had my camera there, but I couldn't take a picture while I was driving. And as soon as I get to the junction, I'm going to pull over and stop. And sure enough, I got to the junction. It was probably another 4 miles from where I was at. I pulled off the side of the road, stopped, and it stopped. It didn't move me. It just stayed stationary. And so I grabbed my camera, opened the door, and as soon as I stepped out of the car, the thing started moving back from the direction that it was following me from, and then just like a light switch, it was gone. I didn't even have time enough to get the camera up.
Wow. That is very common. That's very common that it seems like these craft can sense your thoughts and your intentions.
Yeah. And another time, I may have told you this before, the last time I saw you at the IUFOT conference, did I mention anything about seeing a UFO?
No. Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay, maybe I did.
I mean, everyone tells you about seeing a UFO when you go to a UFO conference, but was it at the conference itself?
No, this was on the way to the conference.
Okay.
When I would go to, it was the IUFOC conference, but it was the one in Arizona, just outside of Phoenix. But anyways, as I would go there, I would take Highway 89 from Kanab.
Oh, yeah, I love Highway 89. I love Highway. I used to live on Highway 89 when I lived in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I lived right off Highway 89.
Oh,
so it goes all the way up to Canada and all the way down to Mexico. Yep.
Okay. Well, when I got to, just before I got to Cameron, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you look off to the left, as you're traveling down 89, you're looking off into the direction of the Hopi Indian Reservation.
Yep.
Okay. Well, there was an object in the sky out there towards the reservation. And I'm looking at this thing, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, it's just an airplane. I'm driving along, but it never moves. It just stays stationary. It's like an oval on about a 45-degree angle.
Okay.
And it's just sitting there, not moving. I'm driving along, and I wanted to pull off the side of the road and look at it, but there was a big, long line of traffic behind me, and there was really no place to pull off. I didn't want to drive into the bar ditch because I didn't think I'd get back out of it. And I'm driving along, and I'm just watching this thing, and it's not moving. I said, that's a UFO. So I go through Cameron, And on the other side of Cameron, I found a place where I could pull over. And just before I pulled over, I said, man, I wish that thing would come closer so I could see it better. And it started to get bigger. It was coming towards me, right? As soon as I thought that. And it got pretty big, and it was a classic UFO disc with a dome on top.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching, and then stayed there for a minute, and then it went back to where it originally was and just stayed there. So I found this pullout, and I pulled in there, got my camera out. As soon as I put my camera up there and looked into the viewfinder, it was gone. It just blinked out.
I have a story about driving to a UFO conference and seeing a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
I was on my way to Providence, Rhode Island. I was with my partner, Andrea,
mm-hmm.
and we were driving in her car, and I was driving. She was in the passenger seat. And as we were approaching Providence, driving south, kind of southeast, I guess, it was late in the afternoon, and it was a little bit cloudy. And I looked up, and it seemed like one cloud, like one section of one cloud was unusually dark. And this is driving in traffic. This isn't like a major, I guess it's a major highway, but it's not like a big wide interstate. It's like a,
right.
you know, as we're approaching the urban area. So we're kind of twisting and turning, and we'd be in the trees for a little while, and then we'd come out of the trees and we get to see it again. And it, and she saw it too, and we both saw it at the same time. Like, what is that?
Hmm.
And it looked like, I'm guessing it would probably be about the size of a billboard,
mm-hmm.
but imagine like a, if you held a playing card in your hand, right? And you, and
right.
you twisted it, right? So you'd see the whole face of it. And if you twisted it, it felt like it was getting skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. If it was just a gray playing card or like a little piece of cardstock that was gray,
hmm.
and you twisted it and you finally got to the sideways view, it would almost look like it disappears, like blink, disappears. So this felt like a twisting piece of like billboard. It wasn't real rectangular shape. It was kind of
mm-hmm.
a little irregularly shaped. So it would just kind of twist and disappear
yeah.
and then reappear because you were just as if it was so thin that you couldn't see it when it was at that sideways
wow.
view. And now this was, we are approaching airport. Some sort of airport is out there because we're seeing planes flying back and forth. So if someone's got like a
mm-hmm.
balloon or something like that, it's the worst place in the world to fly a balloon because it's right near an airport. So it was like,
right.
who would put this up there? What is this thing? And it wasn't moving like a balloon. Had this
mm-hmm.
very sort of steady rotation. At the same time, we were driving, and Andrew was trying to take pictures of it. We never got a picture of it because, it, you know, you'd kind of see it, and then you'd turn a corner, and then you'd come out of the trees again, and there it was.
Right.
And then it felt like we were getting a little bit closer, and I kid you not, there was a dot in the sky. Like, if I was to draw this on a piece of paper, right, I would draw sort of a rectangular shape, and then above
mm-hmm.
it, about the length of the rectangular shape, was a single
mm-hmm.
dot. And it looked like...
Wow.
It looked like someone put a pin in the sky. Like if the sky was not a sky, if it was like a bulletin board, they put a pin
hmm.
on the sky and the card was held by like a invisible spider web thread and slightly turning around.
Really?
And then we turned a couple more times. We never saw it again.
I'll be darned. I had another one that this is a really good one. I wish I could have got a picture of it, though. But I had two witnesses that saw it along with me. And a friend of mine, he's a Baptist minister, and he's one of the local ministers in the Price area. And he was over at my house, and he was trying to proselyte me into joining the Baptist church. And this is like about 10:30 at night, and we're out parked in front of the house, and I'm towards the front of the car, and I got my shoulder laying on the roof, my elbow kind of propping my head up, and he's doing the same thing but looking at me from the rear of the car. And we're discussing religion. And while we're talking, I notice this green glow coming towards the house. And I'm talking, and I've got my eyeballs turned watching this thing, and it's coming closer, and it looks like a big, giant bullet. It's enveloped in a green glow, and it has what looks like a yellow contrail going out behind it, going way off into the distance. And as it gets closer, there's a looks like a porthole window in the side of it. And I'm watching this thing, and it's moving very slowly, just maybe a half a mile an hour, just barely moving. And it's up above the house, I'm going to guess maybe 20, 25 feet, and it's coming between my house and the neighbor's house down our driveway. And as it gets real close, I can see there's something, some kind of a being inside of this. And I'm watching it, and the inside is lit up real bright white, but the outside is like in a green glow. But yet, when you're looking through this glow, you can see the white light. It's not a green-colored light. It's just white. And as it gets closer, there's a dark brown beam in there. And then all of a sudden, real quick, it moves like real fast. And then it's right at the window, looking out that round porthole window. And he makes eye contact with me.
Whoa, you're that close, you could actually see its eyes.
Yes, I can see his eyes.
This is full waking? You're not in a dream realm? You're not?
No.
Okay.
No. We're outside. I'm outside talking to a friend of mine.
And he sees it too?
No, he didn't see it at that time. And I hit the top of his car, and I said, turn around and look. And I pointed. And he, as soon as he turned around, the thing just blinked out and was gone.
Did he get any view of it?
And he turned. What's that?
Did he get any view of it?
He saw it. I know he saw it because he turned back around to me and he says, Ron, he says, I don't believe in things like this. I don't want nothing to do with things like this. I don't want to talk about things like this. And he says, I got to go. And he got in his car and left. I know he saw it. And the next day I was talking to one of the neighbors down at the end of the street, and she was out on her porch and saw it. And the first thing that came to mind, this happened while I was having these encounters with Elby.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who I think it was, because that's the first thing that came into my mind was Elby.
Okay.
Was coming to pay a visit. And right after that, I took a trip to Seattle, Washington. And on the way back, I was on Interstate 84 between Boise and Mountain Home, Idaho.
Yep.
And I'm just coming, I'm probably 3-4 miles from Mountain Home. And I'm in my truck, and I'm buzzing along about 90 miles an hour. On the freeway. This is like 1 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
I was the only one on the freeway.
Yeah, it's very quiet there. I know it well, that section, yeah.
And all of a sudden, I noticed something off to the left of me, and I turned and looked, and it's this same bullet-shaped craft with the porthole window, and somebody sitting inside with the same green glow and the same contrail behind it, but it's just on the other side of the freeway, and it's right beside me. It's like it's racing me. It's not going any faster, and it's not going any slower. We're going along, and I had my camera there, but I had to stop and get it set up to take a night picture. And so I just hit the brakes, and I pulled over onto the shoulder and started to slow down. And this thing, it just makes an abrupt, sharp 90-degree turn and heads out towards the mountains and then disappears and blinks out. And again, and then when I got back, some friends of mine that we do ghost hunting with, together with, he came down and we were going to go out to the kids' ghost town cemetery and do some EVPs. And we're out there, and him and his wife is at one end of the cemetery, and I'm at the other end. And all of a sudden, I see this green light come over the mountain. And it's this bullet-shaped craft, the same one. And it's moving a little faster this time, but it's moving across the sky. And I'm yelling and screaming at Derek and Christina, turn around and look. And I'm pointing in the air, and they're just sitting there waving at me. And I yell and turn around, look, look, you know. And they never did turn around. They started walking towards me, and then it went all the way across to the next horizon and then disappeared. And he walked over and he says, "What's the matter?" And I said, "Well, I was trying to get you. It was a UFO going across the sky. I wanted you to see it. It was like it didn't want them to see it. It was only meant for me."
Do you think they were? Do you think they were somehow? I'm cautious to say this. Somehow mind controlled not to turn around.
Yeah, I think so, because they weren't that far from me and they could hear me yelling. I know they could hear me telling mm-hmm. them turn around, look. And he would normally do that. I don't know why he didn't.
Okay. Well, one thought is that it could be some sort of, you know, they could be yeah. influenced somehow by the craft itself or by the energy of the craft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then here about 3 years ago, I was coming back from Price up here to East Carbon. And it's at night. It's probably about 8, 9 o'clock at night. And I just turned onto Highway 123 and was heading up. And I noticed there was a big green light, and there was something in the light, but I couldn't tell what it was. It was sitting up on top of the mountain. It wasn't on the mountain. It was above the mountain. It wasn't on the ground. And I followed that thing all the way home. And just before I went into East Carbon, I looked over towards the mountain where it was at, and it was gone. And I'm not exactly sure if it was the same UFO, but I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was.
And what's the flavor or the mood of the contact experiences now? Or where do you think you're at in all of this?
I think everything is over with. What I'm supposed to do or you know, the purpose. And the contact I'm having now is more like an observation. It's like one night I was in the living room, and this little being appears, like a little miniature gray. It's about a foot and a half tall, appeared in the house.
Okay.
It wasn't there very long, and then it was gone.
Was it physically there? Were you seeing like an astral projection, or what were you seeing?
It looked physical, but it could have been a holographic image. I don't know.
Okay, just wondering.
It looked solid, and it looked real, and it was standing in the middle of my living room watching me. And then all of a sudden it just disappeared. And another time, I was in the kitchen, and usually when I'm here by myself, I'll put a movie on just so I could have sound in the house.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I'm doing the dishes, and I don't know, I just stopped doing the dishes, and I turned and walked into the living room, and there in the middle of my living room, okay, you've been to my house
sure,
here twice.
Yep.
Or I'm not Price, but East Carbon here.
Yep.
Okay, right where my couch is, right in front of the couch, there was this big, tall reptilian standing there. And his head, it had to have been close to 8 feet tall because his head was right up against the ceiling. And it was wearing a high-collared cloak
mm-hmm.
or oh, I don't know, I guess that's what it's called, a cloak, mm-hmm. kind of a, and it had a great big gold-colored medallion around its neck hanging down with a big red stone in the middle of it. And it was there, and the feeling of love hit me so hard, I thought I was going to pass out. And it was there, and it was just looking at me. It had yellow eyes with the elongated pupils, mm-hmm. like a reptilian.
Yep.
And then it just slowly disappeared. It didn't just blink out. It just, this one slowly disappeared. And another time, I had the, another time I had got up off the couch. I had the TV on. This was at night. Started to walk into the kitchen. And as I got to the kitchen door, there was three flashes of blue light come from my back service porch where the washer and dryer is. And these lights just shot right at me and hit me right in my face. Three of them, one after another. And so I'm thinking, what the heck just happened? And I noticed there was a, what looked like a shadow person standing in the doorway that went into the service porch, mm-hmm. from the kitchen. And I could see this image of a shadow of a person standing there watching me. And then it just like takes a step off to the side of the door and I can't see it anymore. And so my heart's sitting there beating from watching this. And I was thinking, Gus Lord, what's going on? Is there something wrong with my electricity or what? What's going on? And I'm thinking to myself. So I very slowly walked through the kitchen, poked my head around the corner, but then never saw anything. So I went back into the living room and laid down on the floor. And I was going to finish watching the movie that was on, that I had on the TV. And as I'm laying there, I get a real strong feeling there's somebody watching me, real strong. And so I slowly turn my head around and look off towards where my bathroom is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little short hallway going to my bedroom. And I could see this little head kind of poking around the corner, and I think to myself, oh God, no, not again, you know.
And how big is the little head?
It's probably the, oh God, how, it's probably about the size of a softball.
Oh, tiny then. Okay, much tinier than,
yeah, that. It's tiny. This thing's only about a foot and a half tall.
We talked about this very little... okay, we talked about this very briefly in the last episode, but keep going.
It had one of its hands on the edge of the wall, and it was peeking around the corner. It had slanted eyes. It had the cranium was about the size of a softball, but it had a chin, a small chin. It looked like a gray. It was the same one I saw that was in the living room standing watching me, and it stood there and looked at me. It looked just like a little gray, like a miniature gray. And then it moved its head back, and I got up, and I slowly went over to the towards the bathroom, and I poked my head around the corner, and then didn't see it. Went into my bedroom, never saw it again after that. But it's like they're observing me, so. It's like I'm assuming they're just keeping an eye on me.
Okay.
Seeing if I'm all right or whatever. It's the only thing I can think of, because there doesn't seem to be any purpose to them. It's just like they're observing me.
And it's interesting because I was in your house and you told me that exact story, and I didn't realize it was so small, that the being.
Yeah.
You might have told me, and that was a few years ago, and I remembered it being a little bit taller.
Yeah.
That's remarkable, like a little fairy or a little.
Yeah, it was about a foot and a half tall, about that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had a person tell me he was hiking in the Wind River Range of Wyoming, mm-hmm. and he didn't give me permission to tell me the story initially. He has since given me permission to tell the story. And I knew exactly where he was. It was a spot in the backcountry of the Wind River Range. He was with a team mm-hmm. of campers, and he was way out ahead, and he realized he'd hiked farther than the people behind him. So he said, "Oh, I just need to stop and wait for a minute or two, and they'll catch up." So he's standing there alone, and he does this, turns completely around, like totally around, makes a 360 turn. And then when he faces forward again, there's a little, he called it a brownie, a little person on the trail.
Yeah.
And it was, he said it was about 18 inches tall. And he said it had kind of brownish skin, like it was old.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like a little leprechaun or a little fairy.
Oh, wow.
And he said it was close enough to see the stitches in its, like what looked like homemade clothes.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah. So it had this, it didn't have like an alien vibe to it. It had like a little person, like a little fairy or a little, they're in the tradition of the Shoshone and the Crow Nations that are sort of surrounding that area.
Yeah.
There's the little people are, that's part of their lore. And he saw this thing and he said it was totally frozen staring at him. Like it had stopped completely still. And it had this expression on his face, on its little face, like, you know, oops, busted, like he caught me. And he said they looked at each other for a second. And he said he put his hand up and waved at it, like, hello, like it was close. Like he kind of like slowly put his hand up and went, hi. And this thing walked off the trail and walked into the bushes, and he lost sight of it.
Mm.
And he walked up on the trail, and the trail is sandy right there. In the sand were these tiny little, what looked like little moccasin prints.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't know why I did it. I took my boot and I just smeared the prints away.
Oh.
I know.
Maybe he wanted him to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been some sort of mind control projection into him. So.
Yeah. Huh.
Hey, this is Mike, and I am chiming in during the editing. There's one detail I want to add to this story. When I talked to the witness, the fellow who had talked about seeing the little person on the trail, one of the questions I asked him was, what were you thinking in the moments before you saw the little person? Now, remember, he had talked about that he had stopped in the trail and did a slow 360-degree turn. And what he said to me was, he said, I did this turn, this slow turn, looking at all the beauty around me, and I was in this place of total wonder and appreciation of the moment and the place I was in. He said, I loved it. I loved the place I was in, and I truly appreciated it. And then he turned around and faced the trail, and that's when he saw the little person. Now, this detail, it means a lot to me. The fact that this person was in a genuine place of wonder and appreciation. And that was when he saw what I can only call a magical being. Okay, let's get back to the interview with Ron. And have you spent any time at, you know, have you ever been to the, over by Roosevelt near the...
Skinwalker Ranch.
Skinwalker Ranch, yeah.
Yeah, many times. I've been over there at night. When you could drive up to the gate, but now you can't. They won't let you drive up there. They'll get you for trespassing.
And any experiences there? Any sense there?
Other than weird lights in the tree, that's the only experiences I've had there. And I was going there quite regularly, and I was there one night. I think it was like about 3 in the morning, 3 a.m. And I was up on top of the ridge, parked at the reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there watching towards the Skinwalker Ranch. and a four reservation police officers show up. And they ask me, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just sitting here waiting for sunrise so I can get a picture of the sunrise." And I'm thinking, they're not going to buy this. And sure enough, they says, "Look, Ron," it says, "we know who you are."
Wow, really?
"And we know what you're here for." So he says, "Have you got a tribal permit to be here on this property?" I go, "No." And he says, "Get you a tribal permit if you're going to come back here, or we can arrest you for trespassing."
And this, so they knew from your license plate somehow? They ran your license plate?
Yeah, they ran my plates, and they said, we know who you are.
Well, like you were on the special list of, like, what is your sense?
What's that?
What is your sense when they said they know?
It's like when I go to Area 51. I think they know who I am.
And when have you gone to Area 51? This is, you're jumping to all the hot spots here. You got Skinwalker Ranch.
I've been to Area 51 three or four times. Just going over there up to the gate and, you know, taking pictures and, you know, just being there. But then I had a real bad vibe the last time I was there that I shouldn't do this. Somebody with the experiences I've had, this probably not a very, very smart thing to do, going by yourself to mm-hmm. the gate of Area 51, that, you know. And I just figure it's probably not a good idea to go out there alone.
Yeah. And so how are you doing right now? Do you feel like there's any other stories you need to tell?
That's pretty much it in a nutshell, other than, you know, dreams and stuff like that.
So this big, long lifetime of challenging experiences, scary experiences, benevolent experiences, and all of it, what's your sense now?
I don't know. I'm still not 100% sure what's been going on, but I do feel like that there was a purpose of this all happening. And at the beginning, that purpose was hybridization. I believe that was the purpose. And all this other stuff that happened after the hybridization phase, when it became more conscious, more spiritual, I think them were more like of a reward. I don't know if that's the right word to use. Kind of like, okay, you've done what you're supposed to do, so we're going to let you experience this stuff.
And fly the ship, yeah.
And fly the ship. But I just don't know. Like, flying the ship, at the time I was doing ghost hunting, and we were trying to get spirits to move on. And I'm the flying the ship, taking humans to another dimensional Earth. Do I take that literally, or do I take it as like a symbolism
mm-hmm.
or something?
Metaphorically,
I don't know. Yeah. Because that's kind of what I'm doing when I ghost hunt. I'm trying to take it, these spirits trapped here on Earth, to move on to the spirit world.
How interesting, because you told both of those accounts on a previous episode, both, you know, the ghost hunting and that the one remarkable event where you saw the orb come up out of the ground.
Oh, yeah.
and then also the reason for traveling in the ship. I never would have put that together, but I, you know, this is what I've run into, where like you have these experiences. Some of them can be seen as literal. Some of them can be seen as metaphoric. Some of them are blurry in the mm-hmm. middle, and you don't know which is which.
And they're real vague. They don't. I've asked them how, I don't know how many times, what's going on, what's my purpose, and blah blah this and that. But it's always vague answers. They don't want you to know exactly what's going on. Just the bare essentials.
Now, I may have asked you this in another episode. I honestly don't remember now. But as far as, I'm going to ask you a question, sort of 1 to 10, how would you rate your sense of mission?
Probably 5.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. Okay. You know, what's funny, I ask that of a lot of people, and I don't ask what the mission is. Everyone is just like, you know, oh, I feel so drawn. I've had many people answer 11 when I ask that 1 to 10 question on their sense
really?
Of mission. Yeah, people are pretty fired up. Some people are...
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's very interesting.
Now, I'm answering that from the premise that I don't really know 100% what's going on.
And neither do they. Yeah. So but at the same time they feel drawn to like as if they're like need to do something.
Yeah.
And then they don't quite know what it is. It's very common
now,
among
people. I feel I'm to do this and not to worry about it. And I get people telling me, well, these entities you're seeing are demons and you're going to go to hell and all this stuff. And I'm sorry, I don't believe that. I think some of them might be demonic, but I'm not really that sure of it. It's just, everything is just basically speculation.
Yep. Yep, I mean, that's tough. It's tough because you have to, like, we're confronted with these little bits and pieces of a story. We want to put all the puzzle pieces together. They don't always fit together. So you're forced to speculate. You're forced to guess. You're forced to take your best guess. And I'm certain most of the time, the speculation is probably wrong.
Hmm.
You know?
And I want to, you know, I want to keep it as truthful as I can. I don't want to... If I speculate on anything, I'm going to tell you about it.
Yeah, and I try to do that too. I had a friend, Mac Tonies, and he was wonderful about, if he was speculating, he would like stop the sentence and say, I'm speculating now. And then he would speculate about something. And then at the end, he said, okay, I'm done speculating. And that was like the most valuable lesson I ever had as far as, that was very early on as I was stepping into this field. Like, it's okay to speculate, but some people do it and it's a little shifty or it's a little like murky.
Yeah.
They kind of... They, you know, like the people who say they point to the sky and say, oh, that's a light beam ship from the Pleiades. And I'm like, well, that's a really interesting light in the sky. But, you know, how do you know that? And I'm very cautious of that kind of thing.
I am, too. I got pictures of odd things in the sky. I got one I took up here on top of the mountain above East Carbon here up on Bruin Point. And I was up taking pictures of contrails because there was contrails zipping across the sky. And I wanted to see if I'd catch something in one of them. And sure enough, I did. But I didn't have a movie camera with me. All I had was my 35 millimeter. And there was this, it looked like four big bubbles stuck together. And it was right next to the contrail, and it was moving. And you could see it moving, and it was just following the contrail, except for it was in the opposite direction that the plane was going. But it never crisscrossed through it. It just paralleled it. And then when it got way down close to where I was, and I could see this with my naked eye, and I got a ton of pictures of it. And I've been showing it to people, and I said, I got this as a UFO because I don't know what it is.
Unknown.
It doesn't look like anything that I have seen before, airplane or helicopter or what. And there's, oh, that's just a bunch, somebody's party balloons. They turned loose. I'm sorry, but I don't believe that.
Well, it's one thing to see a little picture where oftentimes the picture only shows a tiny little dot, and there's another thing entirely to see it in real life and see the motion it makes in the sky and such. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I would have these experiences that one night I was going over to visit some friends in Tooele, and I would always take the back road through Eagle and Stockton. And when I'd get to Merkur, this would be like about midnight, I'd just say to heck with it, and I'd drive up to the cemetery, and I'd pull over and go to sleep, wait till morning. And this is weird. One night I did that, and I went to sleep, and something woke me up, and I woke up, and everything is so bright, I can't see. And then all of a sudden, it's gone. And I'm thinking, what the heck happened? You know? And it was like that. It was exactly the same thing that happened to me when I had that encounter in northern Utah by Woodruff, right up there on the Idaho or Wyoming state line with Utah, a big flash of light, and it was there for so long, and then it was gone. Except for I don't remember anything happening. Oh, and then marks, these encounters I was having in between 08 and 09, I would end up with strange marks on my body. I'll have to send you pictures of them.
Okay.
And the one where they healed my back, man, I had marks on my shoulders and my feet, my thumb, all kinds of places. And I got some good pictures of them, so I'll have to send them to you.
Yes. We've been collectively, this is the end of our fifth hour. Actually, it's much more than that because some of the episodes were about an hour and a half long. So I don't know how many hours we've actually had this conversation. It's probably getting to 7 or 8 hours at this point.
Yeah.
How has it all been? How is it, you know, what's your, what I'm asking is, is there a way to sum it up? You can say no, but is there a way to sum all this up?
I was thinking of that. Without knowing exactly what their purpose is, it's going to be hard to sum it up. Other than the best way I can sum it up is I've had four stages of it, a beginning, a purpose, a kind of like a reward or a consciousness, mm-hmm. and then an observation. It's like a parallel life alongside my regular life.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can sum it up.
And that may be the only way you can sum it up. You know, I think that some people try to, you know, I don't know, become gurus or something like that after they've had these experiences. And I'm always reticent and wary of that. And I think we have to keep the question open, you know, ask better questions, and we may never get answers, but if we ask better questions and seek in the direction of those questions.
It's like living two lives.
And I know what that's like. And I feel like at this point, like you've had many, many more experiences than I have. But for me, it feels like I've at the point now, I wouldn't have been able to say this a few years ago, where I feel like I'm much more at peace and I have better integrated those two parts of my life. And I'll tell you, I spent a long time ignoring, denying that other side of my life. I did not want to deal with it. And I was forced to just by the, you know, by the synchronicities really that forced me to look into it.
At first it was real scary. I didn't like it. I would pray to God for it to stop. It just keep right on going. And finally I told myself, I said, God's not going to help me. And then after so long after that, I started thinking maybe this is related to God. Because I did, when I got into the 2000s, when I got into ghost hunting and researching paranormal stuff,
mm-hmm.
I still consider myself religious, but not a fanatic. I would get into asking and praying to see the mysteries of God. And this stuff just kept coming.
Did it increase when you began these prayers?
Well, it did, but it also, that was the same time I started having experiences with Elby, and I know it increased with them. But that's what makes me think that this is related also. Religion is, I don't care what anybody says, and I'll argue with anybody, religion has part in this. I know it does. Not the dogma that everybody hates, just the basic religion. You know, God, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, the Star of Bethlehem, it certainly sounds like a UFO to
mm-hmm.
me, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last week, we talked, and I was wrung out by the time we got done talking last week. I was emotionally drained. And
yeah.
That was a powerful, beautiful set of stories we collected. That sort of 2 hours got or two separate
yeah.
Episodes, three and four were played out over the last couple of weeks, and now this would be the fifth episode, and it feels like. Here, I'll just put this out to you. We should probably end it here, and I stepped into this having no idea how many episodes we would do. And if you,
right.
if anything comes up at any point, just give me a call. We'll do another little episode, even if it's just 15
oh,
minutes.
You bet.
I can tack it on to the end of another show or something, because people have been responding remarkably well to your story, and I am so grateful because I wasn't sure how it was going to be received. So I'm
right.
relieved,
me
and
too.
I also want to make sure that. That if you have something comes up, but just give me a call. We'll figure out a way to tack it on. Even if it's just 15 minutes or 10 minutes, we can plug it right into the
you
end
bet.
Of another episode.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I, like I say, I really appreciate you allowing me to talk with you on this. All the other interviews I've ever done, I've just talked about the experiences, nothing else, the dreams, nothing else that was related to it. So this one's a little more complete.
I agree. Well, I wanted it to be complete. I wanted to be wrung out at the end of this. I wanted to squeeze the dish rag and get every little drop out of it. And so I feel like we did a pretty good job.
Right.
So, but yes. So again, I guess this is goodbye for this episode, the set of episodes, but please, please, please keep me updated if anything shows up and I will, keep checking in with you and.
Okay.
And you're working on your book.
I'm still working on it.
Well, keep working on it. I mean, it's a remarkable set of stories. So please make sure that make that happen. Starting a book is easy. That's what I've learned. Starting a book is easy. Finishing a book is tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm more power to you. I'm gonna send good vibes for you on this book project.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Good.
Trying to get Elby to come down and write it for me.
Well, if they can send thought waves, maybe they can improve your typing. That's what my biggest flaw is.
Oh, I have to be in the right frame of mind to get on this computer and start writing. And it's hard to get into that frame of mind.
You know, the best advice I had is even if you write a paragraph a day, just write a little bit every
yeah.
day, even if just a few sentences.
That's what I did the other night. I wrote one paragraph, and that was it, and then I ended
that's,
it.
That's plenty. Sometimes I've worked a whole day on a paragraph before just trying to get it right. So,
yeah.
Well, let me say it one more time. Thank you so much. I am so grateful for this, and I'm just honored to give you the chance to tell your story.
Oh, I appreciate it, and I thank you very much for allowing me.
You're very welcome.
It's... But I got the feeling that I'm supposed to be talking about this, so.
I sensed that, and that was exactly the reason I urged you to come on.
Okay.
Okay. Bye for now.
All right. Okay, we'll see you.
We'll see you. Bye.
Well, and I got to thinking about it. You know, that stuff that happened when I was a kid is important. And there was one story I failed to, that I disappeared out of the house one time when I was 3 years old.
What happened? I'm still recording. Go ahead.
I disappeared out of the house when I was 3 years old. Me and my sister and my brother, we were sitting on the floor in the living room, and I remember it was in the daytime. My sister and brother were playing a game, and I'm watching them. Well, I was always, we had this big front door that was had a big glass window in it, and I don't know why, but I was always fascinated. As a kid, I'd go up there and get between the door and the blinds and cup my hands around my eyes and just stare out that window in the door. And I had, this is weird, I had friends. That's all I knew them as, was friends out there. They were a little taller than I was. And I'd sit there and wave at them, and they'd wave at me, and they would keep motioning me and beckoning me to come out. But I couldn't. I couldn't get out the door because it had a latch instead of a doorknob. And this one time, we were sitting on the floor with my brother and sister, and I got up and went and looked, and they were beckoning me to come through. And next thing, all I can remember is I'm on the other side of the door. And these, I don't know what they were. They weren't kids, but they were, I called them small people. They took me up to the corner, and we went around the corner, and the next thing I can remember is I'm up above, and I'm waving bye to them, and that's all. And then my mom and dad, they couldn't find me for like an hour. I was gone. And then I ended up way far away in a hardware store, out in front of a hardware store.
Wow.
Weird. A strange
Was it close enough you could have walked there?
Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, that's very common in these reports, you know, especially little children being missing, panicked parents, oftentimes like little kids who will be missing out of the crib, they'll call the police, and then, you know, the police will search the neighborhood, and then they'll come back and they'll look in the room again, the child will be back in the crib. That's somewhat common in these reports.
Mm. But how I got out of a locked house, my mom and dad were just perplexed by it. They don't know how the heck I got out of there. I could not have unlocked that door and opened it.
Yeah.
Because it had a latch that you had to grab the latch and then mash it down with your hand as you grabbed it.
So, yes, you're telling me a story. I've heard that story in one form or another many, many times. Yeah, that's remarkable. But I mean, the implication is they snatched you right out of the house and they returned you, you know, and they might have returned you to that hardware store just so you would know that there had been some strange event that took place.
But I've asked my brother about it many times, and he says, that's weird. He says, we were sitting there, and I don't remember anything happening. It's just you were there, and then just in the blink of an eye, he says, you were gone. My sister says the same thing. I was there, and then I wasn't. But anyways.
I'll tag this little one in. That's a good story. I'll just plug that one right in somewhere.
Okay. All right.